You are listening to Clearly Connected, a podcast that inspires new ways to reconnect to ourselves, to others, and to our natural environment in a world where so many of us are disconnected. I'm your host, Carrie Doan. I'm a life coach, an entrepreneur, an advocate for change, and a believer in all things possible. Today, I'm going to dive into a solo podcast about something that I have years of experience with, and that is overcoming anxiety. I'll share my own personal journey and ways I learned to cope with it, along with some groundbreaking research that reveals the deepest roots of where the symptoms originally began in our earliest years on this earth. I'm so glad you're here to join us as we move closer to a more deeply connected way of living. Welcome, welcome, all you beautiful people. Today, I'm going to be doing a solo podcast, and I am going to be covering a topic that I think about quite often, and I think most of us struggle with from time to time in our lives, and that is the issue of anxiety and how we can ultimately overcome it. So, how many of you struggle with anxiety? Well, research is showing that anxiety disorders are the most common mental health issue in the United States. Over 40 million adults experience an anxiety disorder at some time in their lives. And then 7% of children who are aged 3 to 17 also experience issues with anxiety every year. So I think it's safe to say that we all experience it at some point in our lives, but it's also a matter of, can we harness it, right? So for example, speaking in front of a group can make us feel anxious, but that anxiety also motivates us to prepare and to practice. Driving in heavy traffic is another common source of anxiety for people, but it helps to keep us alert and cautious in order to avoid accidents. So that's a healthy way that we can see anxiety. However, when feelings of intense fear and distress become overwhelming and then prevent us from doing everyday activities, that's when an anxiety disorder may be at the root of it. So when I do my podcast interviews, I always like to invite my guests to share a little bit about their story as it relates to the topic. And so today I want to share a little bit of my journey with and through anxiety and how I ultimately came to cope with it and overcome it. So I remember in my late teens is when I began to develop issues with anxiety. I felt this pressure to figure my life out upon graduating, but I had no idea what I wanted to do. I didn't have the direction. I didn't really have the support to figure that out. So insomnia started to settle in. Then fast forward a few years, I got married at the age of 24. And this was another very stressful time of life because right after we decided to get married, we made the decision to move to British Columbia. And in this time period, I remember that my hair was falling out and I still was not sleeping very well. So we had to sell all of our belongings, or we chose to, which included our cars, our house, our furniture, and shipped across the country to work with the homeless for a year in Canada. The stress levels I experienced in this time were intensely high because we were living in community. We were embedded now in a new culture, which Vancouver is this melting pot of different cultures, people from all around the world, from Asia, from Italy, French people. So there was a real culture shock going on. And on top of that, we were working with people who were addicted to drugs, who were prostitutes on the street, or were homeless. So these were very traumatized people. And this was an intense period of life. So in this time period, I was rarely sleeping. My insomnia was just soaring and I was going crazy. But one day I had this mentor of mine and she sat me down and invited me to start to practice acceptance. And that, as skeptical as I was, it started to change my anxiety levels. So over time, things started to improve. And the years were going by. I was just kind of coping little by little with these issues. But then once I had my second child, my anxiety came back with a vengeance. And I found myself being hospitalized a few weeks after giving birth because I didn't know how to cope with the transition, with the lack of support that I had, and with my anxiety levels. So in this time period, I reached out and received enormous amounts of support through medication, through therapy, through care from my community and network. And I began learning the tools to deal with and ultimately overcome it. But most of what helped me had to do with my mindset. But the biggest factor I think that really helped me to rid myself of anxiety once and for all, or I would say now 99% of the time, was not just working with my mind and getting support, but making decisions to live a more authentic life. So I'm going to get into defining what authenticity really means in a few minutes, but what I'm learning is that research in psychology and science is now validating that there is a direct link between anxiety and authenticity. So today I want to illustrate that connection to see if this might be a link in your life if you happen to struggle with anxiety. So let me just start off by, let's talk about what are some of the symptoms of anxiety. Because these disorders, they're a group of related conditions that each have unique symptoms. But I do think that all anxiety disorders have one thing in common, which is a persistent and excessive fear or worry in situations that aren't truly threatening. So here are a few examples of maybe some emotional symptoms that you might experience. It could be feelings of apprehension or dread. It could be feeling really tense or jumpy. It might involve, you know, emotions of like irritability or feeling restless or anticipating the worst and just being on guard and watchful for signs of danger. So then add to that, let's think about what are some of the physical symptoms. That might be something like a pounding or racing heart or a shortness of breath. Maybe it looks like sweating or tremors and twitches. Some people deal with headaches and fatigue and insomnia like I dealt with. Or it might even be an upset stomach. I remember in my situation, the litmus test, the indicator that told me, okay, you are really anxious, Carrie, was that my appetite would be completely suppressed. And I remember eating eggs and toast and it just tasting like cardboard, like I had to force it down. And that's when I knew, okay, anxiety levels are high, time to figure out what I can do. Because when you're in the experience, sometimes you don't know that it's actually happening. You might convince yourself, oh, well, this is just normal or just is here and you can't even see it. So paying attention to these symptoms can help you to know when your anxiety might be higher than normal. So what actually causes anxiety? Some people think it's genetic. Perhaps a piece of that is true, but I think that the biggest contributor is our environment. So a stressful or traumatic event, such as abuse or the death of a loved one or violence or prolonged illness, think about especially as when we're children, That's often linked to the development of these disorders. And I'm going to get into that in just a little bit and how we can shift our environment, both externally and internally, to make it a peaceful place and to help us to cope with the stress in our lives. So now I'm going to pause. Let's talk about authenticity. And then I'll make that connection between anxiety and that. So I want to define authenticity. I think, you know, it's this essential aspect of personal growth and relationships and communication, and I think our overall human experience. So what exactly does it mean to be authentic? Well, I like to define it as being true to oneself, to be able to express oneself honestly, to be able to show genuine emotions or your thoughts or your feelings. So I think that when you're able to live into that, it will lead to a more genuine and fulfilling life. So what is exactly the connection between anxiety and authenticity? Well, I think they're connected because anxiety can arise when people feel like they cannot be their true selves, or when they worry about being judged or rejected for who they are. Anxiety will then develop when you don't feel safe enough to be accepted as you are without needing to conform to who you think you should be, right? Many of us are conditioned to follow certain rules in society, which then compromises a sense of who we actually are. So if a person is unable to express themselves honestly, then this can lead to feelings of insecurity and inadequacy that ultimately manifest in anxious behaviors. So think about it. Go back to your childhood for a minute. How many of us truly felt accepted as children? How many of us had the space and the freedom to express our thoughts, our feelings, and our opinions without getting judged, shamed, or shut down? I think it's very, very few. And that reality has had a very big cost on mental health, as you can see manifested today. So I want to talk about the mental and the physical impact of living an inauthentic life and why being connected to ourselves is the foundational path to healing, to wholeness, to living a life that's enjoyable and filled with pleasure. And most of what I'm going to share here in this arena, it's based on the theories and the teachings of medical doctor and psychiatrist Gabor Mate, who I've studied extensively, and he is doing groundbreaking research in the mental health field around trauma, addiction, ADHD, and the consequences of being disconnected from our needs. So I want you to pause and think about this question. What is it that makes you stressed? You know, you might immediately think of practical, concrete things like your workload, your distanced relationships, or even the uncertainty of our economic future. And while these things may be true, I think they are only surface level issues that stem from something deeper. I believe that a large part of what makes us anxious is being separated from our body and our breath, and being separated from our own personal integrity and authenticity. So again, what do I mean by authenticity? Very simply, again, it means making choices from your sense of personal autonomy and courageously expressing your human needs and wishes to other people. It's being connected to your true self, right? The self that you were before the world conditioned you to be someone else. Think about when you were a little child, right? This was the part of you or the version of you that had a sense of curiosity, of creativity, and confidence before all these rules, regulations, and systems took it away. So research in psychology and bioenergetics now shows that once you reconnect to your authenticity, many medical conditions will abate and even remit completely. So I want to unpack this a little further. There is, in our inherent DNA, a deep need to belong, a deep need to be loyal, and a deep sense of betrayal when that loyalty is somehow insulted. So if you didn't get the love and acceptance that you needed as a child, you will be consumed with being likable and being nice, maybe a people pleaser, right? You might become a very helpful and kind individual, but oftentimes that is a coping pattern that was established long, long ago to get your needs met. So, of course, you know, you can be generally nice and generally supportive to others and still look after your own needs. That is human nature, I think. But a lot of people, especially women, are very nice and likable and helpful by suppressing their own needs. And that is a coping mechanism. You know, everybody says how nice they are. And then when they die at the age of 50 of cancer, you know, they show up at their funeral and they weep about how nice they were and how selfless they were. But is it possible that there could have been something else at play? So what Gabor Mate states is that the child basically has two needs. Their number one is this need for attachment, which is the seeking of closeness and proximity with another human being. And fundamentally, the attachment dynamic is the most powerful dynamic of human life, right? Its basic purpose is the protection and the nurturing of the young. So then infants attach to their parents and parents attach to their infants. And, you know, we're wired for attachment all of our lives. It's the most important dynamic we have, and it will trump everything else. So that's one need we have, attachment. And without attachment, there's no human life. It's just impossible. So on the other hand, there is a second need, and that is the need for authenticity. That is to be ourselves. And again, this does have to do with survival, right? If you're not in touch with yourself out in the world, you won't survive. So authenticity is being in touch with yourself and being able to act on your awareness of self in relation to your environment. So if I feel something, I pay attention to that, right? But if a child way back when was confronted with a dilemma that if I'm authentic to my parents and I express my feelings and they can't handle it or my attachments are threatened because my parents are unable to really see me and listen to me because they're too stressed or depressed or even traumatized themselves, then the child will automatically, but not consciously, suppress their authenticity. And so the suppression of authenticity and our gut feelings, or I would call our intuition, it's a coping mechanism, right? And this means that I'm no longer in touch with my needs. I no longer pay attention to my feelings and my emotions. I disassociate, and I'll no longer be aware of them nor express them, right? I won't even know what I need. So many people that I ask that question, what do you want or what do you need? They don't even know. And this has all kinds of implications. But one of them is that I may compulsively serve the needs of others. I may ignore my own and hence create disease. Or maybe then I develop all kinds of false needs to get the attention that I'm desperate for. So there is this irresolvable tension between authenticity and attachment that many children in our society are faced with that results in their self-suppression. And one of the possible outcomes is that niceness is this coping mechanism that is causing stress and disease. So how do we know when we're being authentic? Well, years before I had any of these concepts formally worked out in my mind or had read much about it, I struggled to know when I was betraying myself or being less than myself. So that authentic self tends to disappear. And then when we're not in touch with it, there's this kind of a shame or a type of suffering that happens. And so that shame and that internal suffering, you know, that sense of self-betrayal, it's our guide that tells us we are not being ourselves. And this happens to a lot of people. So then we look into the eyes of others, and yet internally we suffer shame because we know that we're not being our true selves. So when we have shame, right, how do we know that? Well, for many of us, there is this internal knowledge or sense that something is not right that will arise. And why is that? Well, I think it's because that essential self hasn't gone away. That true self is still in there and it's calling to us. And we don't feel right when we betray it or are out of contact with it. Now, I don't think this happens necessarily for everybody, right? For some people, it takes a catastrophe. So what I'm saying is that at some point or another, if you're not in touch with that inner voice, if you don't hear it, then the body will speak to you loud and clear. You're going to have something happen to you. And sometimes that'll happen in the form of illness or symptoms. And that is the way that the body is talking to you, right? Maybe it's anxiety creeping up. The body is telling you no when you're not saying no. And if the voice doesn't speak to you directly, or if you don't listen, your body at some point is going to kick in. Or, you know, maybe you're going to get depressed or anxious or something else. Or something will happen in your personal relationships. And at that point, you know, you can say something like, I'm not with the right partner, screw them, it's all their fault, which many of us say. But for some people, it becomes the opening of a door where we begin to look at, okay, what in here wasn't authentic? What in here wasn't genuine? And how maybe did I create this situation? How do I keep creating these situations over and over again? Like, am I just a victim of bad luck? Or maybe is there some kind of pattern here? So in other words, something happens, some difficulty happens to shake you out of your complacent belief that things are just fine the way they are. And I think that the most difficult things that happen to us are also the most compassionate things, because there's a part of us, I think, that loves us more than anything else, that somehow puts roadblocks in our way saying, hey, that's not the way. That's not the way. That's not the way. Right? And so there are these roadblocks that essentially are inviting us to bring us back to ourselves. And then we have this choice. We can look at our difficulties as problems to get rid of, or we can look at them as teachings to bring us back to ourselves. And the beautiful thing is that once you make that step to reconnect to yourself, many medical conditions will then abate and even remit completely, with multiple examples that are written up in literature. So the good news is that healing is always possible. And I experienced that in my life. The more authentic I became, the less I cared about what people thought of me and just expressed who I was to the world, the more inner peace, security, and freedom that came into my being. So I want to pause here real quick, because I think it's important to point our attention to the data that shows how women, I think, are suffering some of the consequences of being inauthentic to their needs. You know, I talk a lot about people pleasers, and historically, women have been the ones to take on the role of supporting and understanding their partners, but often at the risk of ignoring their own needs. So I came across this study that was done where out of 100 women with breast cancer, only 7 carried the gene. 93 did not. So this means that for the most part, genes do not determine illness. Well, what then does? And by the way, this is true for both physical and mental illness. So when we talk about genetics, it can be this lazy person's way of trying to explain something because scientifically, there's very little basis to it. Scientifically, the data shows that genes are turned on and off by our environment. So it's a question of what kind of environment is acting on certain genes that will promote one kind of development or a less healthy kind of development. So this loss of authenticity, for reasons that we'll not go into exploring now, but maybe you will intuit to a significant degree, this loss of authenticity, I think, is a significant cause of illness and distress. There is this quote that I came across. It says that most of our stress and tensions come from our compulsive needs to act to the role of someone that we are not, right? But I want to emphasize and drive home this point that this inauthenticity that we all experience, it wasn't our fault, right? It wasn't a mistake. It wasn't a moral failure. All it was an adaptive response to our early environment. So the question becomes then, not to judge ourselves for being inauthentic, not to judge ourselves for being disconnected from ourselves, but to understand that actually these were normal responses to an abnormal environment. And I think, though, that there is this part of us that can never be destroyed, right? It can be obscured. We can lose our connection with it. And I certainly have for long periods of my life. But it's always there as long as there's consciousness. There is this capacity for healing, for rejoining our disconnected parts, and to become whole and to heal. I think that's all just within us. Which means that I don't have a negative message for you here, right? It's such a hopeful one. The message that I have is that healing is always possible, even in the face of trauma. Because trauma, I think, is not what happened to you, but what happened inside of you as a result. And so if you're still carrying the imprints and the residues of what happened to you, that can actually be healed. So if I got the message as a child that I wasn't worthy or important just for existing, that I had to prove my worth to the world, and that created certain behaviors, well, then I can actually come to the conclusion that it was never true, right? It was never true that I wasn't worth it. It was never true that you're not worth it. It was never true. It was simply a conclusion that you came to as a result of what happened to you. And if you can stop trying to prove to the world by being a hard worker or by being exorbitantly pleasant or focusing on your looks all the time or focusing on your successes or your achievements, and instead you just dare to show up as the vulnerable creature that you are and reconnect with your true vulnerable self, which at the time adaptively was too painful to experience, you no longer are that helpless child. And this means that healing is always possible for you. So I want to wrap up with a quick summary again of why authenticity is so important, especially as we think about how it can help us alleviate anxiety. Number one, it builds trust because people can sense when someone is being sincere and honest. And when people feel that someone is authentic, they're more likely to trust them and establish this deeper connection. Being authentic can also improve your relationships because it fosters genuine communication, which leads to a better understanding of one another. And when people are authentic, they're more likely to be empathetic, respectful, and accepting. It can also help you develop self-awareness because it requires people to understand what are your values, what are your beliefs and your motivations. And when people are authentic, they're more in tune with their emotional landscape, with their thoughts and their opinions and their behaviors. And that actually helps them to make better decisions to achieve higher levels of growth. Being authentic can also encourage creativity because it helps them to express themselves freely and without fear of judgment, right? You'll be more likely to take risks and try new things, which then leads to innovation and growth. And finally, it can just promote your overall well-being, right? As we're talking about letting go of anxiety, overcoming that, authenticity, as you've seen, it reduces stress. And when people are authentic, they don't have to pretend to be somebody they're not, which can be emotionally exhausting. Being authentic, it allows people to be comfortable with who they are and therefore lead more fulfilling lives. So I want to give you three quick thoughts before I tie this up about what you can do about anxiety. Obviously, the one I've been talking about the most, being authentic, right? Finding out what is it that you want? What are your true core values and desires? And pay attention to that and go after it and let go of what the world says you should be and see what's right for you. It takes a lot of courage, but the reward is so worth it. Secondly, I would encourage you to just play, right? Play like a child. Go out and have an adventure, explore something new. That's where a sense of curiosity can be born, openness. That gives you insights. It connects you to your gut instinct. Let go of the seriousness of life and just enjoy it. And then finally, I would encourage you to prioritize and forge deeper connections with people in your life. We are social creatures. We are not designed to do this alone. And oftentimes when people are anxious, they isolate, they separate themselves. But if you can go towards people who are safe and who will encourage your authenticity, you'll find so much support and freedom, and you'll feel that security knowing that you're not alone in this life. So if you find yourself struggling with anxiety and you don't know how to resolve it at the root, I want to invite you to check out my Connect to Your Core program. This is a new program I've developed. It's a 12-week journey that I take you on where we discover, number one, what it is that you want and what is holding you back from getting that, while at the same time learning skills like clear communication and setting bold boundaries. In this journey, we get real and raw and vulnerable and heal those parts of you that may have been disconnected long, long ago. So if this sounds like something you need, I'll go ahead and link the page in the show notes for you to check it out. And I truly hope that this podcast has encouraged you to know that we can all overcome the symptoms that make us suffer, right? I'm amazed at the capacity of the human condition to heal and become whole. And I think that when we bravely make that journey home back to ourselves, we then get the reward of inner peace, true security, and a pleasure-filled life where we know without a shadow of a doubt that we are all truly connected. If this episode resonated with you, I have something that you might love. Part of what helps me live a life free of stress and anxiety is embracing genuine connection with myself and others. Building a coaching business centered on this principle has sparked many of my clients to their own success while offering me the passion of getting to do what I love every day. If you're looking for support to overcome your own anxiety and overwhelm, I invite you to check out my new 12-week program, Connect to Your Core, where I help you discover what it is that you truly want and support you to have authentic and empowered relationships. I'll link it in the show notes, so check it out if you're interested. And I'm so glad you joined us. So remember to stay connected.